Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott, and I'm here with Mark Pascal. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every weekday from 11 a.m. to 12 noon. You can also reach us through our website at www.restaurantguysradio.com, where you can find out how to receive our podcasts from iTunes or Podcast Alley or any of those neat places, and you can get our show delivered to your computer every time you sign on. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis. How are you doing today?
Just grand, thank you.
Yeah, all's well.
All's well. I want to tell everybody that in the next segment of our show, we have a guest, a gentleman named Paul Rosen, who's a professor of psychology at the University of Pennsylvania, where he's co-director of the school's Solomon Asch Center for the Study of Ethnopolitical Conflict, and he's here to talk to us about appetites and taste and learning about the world through how different people taste different things. Pretty exciting, no?
Very exciting.
You have anything more mundane for us to start with today?
Well, I'll tell you, talking about tastes, mundane, I never talk about the mundane.
That's what we tell you.
Anyway, I'm reading through the paper a couple weeks ago, and I find an article in the Star Ledger and the Saver section that says, Learning to Like Okra is the title.
Mm.
Why do I have to learn to like stuff?
I have yet to learn to like okra.
I haven't learned to like okra at all. For those of you who have never had a real experience with okra is the vegetable that's used in primarily in gumbos and foods like that. And the best word to describe okra is mucilaginous.
Yeah, okra has in the middle of it this sort of like gel kind of thing, and it's used in gumbos, for example, to that gel sort of binds it together and gives the thing a gloppy texture.
Yeah, ew.
I don't like
it. I'll tell you, never got a taste for it. Gumbos would be delicious
without the
okra.
Mucilaginous nature of okra.
Mucilaginous. That's the word they used in that's Star Ledger's word, not my word. And why do I have to like something that's mucilaginous?
Well, you know,
I usually try and get rid of things that are mucilaginous? Isn't that like, oh my God, this apple's mucilaginous, throw it away.
I gotta blow my nose, get rid of some mucilaginy. Well, actually, I can't. People are going to be emailing us. I mean, I can hear that the keyboard's clacking right now all across the world about okra. But I will tell you that, you know, usually I like things that are. I think that certain things are interesting. Why you learn to like food? I mean, if you look at say black-eyed peas. Black-eyed peas are one of the best legumes you can eat. It's complete protein. It's just absolutely one of the best legumes you can eat. Unfortunately, they taste like cardboard.
Yeah, little cardboardy.
But
paper quality.
But when people use black-eyed peas in food, learning to like black-eyed peas is pretty important if you live in a place where black-eyed peas grow easily because they're a cheap source of complete protein and they're really good for you. And so a lot of soul food uses black-eyed peas. Hop and John is a dish that I like it's really great. But the flavor comes from the ham hock in the middle.
Right.
You know?
Right. What we're doing is we're working really hard to make these disgusting foods taste good. I don't know. Let's not work that hard.
I like Hoppin' John. I'm all about it. It works really well. Okra's not my big one. I actually had dinner last night with a pretty famous winemaker, an editor of a national magazine, and a wine writer, both of whom shall remain nameless. But the winemaker I was with was a guy named Paul Hobbs. We're a big fan of Paul Hobbs wines. He's one of the top winemakers in California and in Argentina.
Also a really good guy.
And a really good guy. And we went to BLT Prime, which is a steakhouse in Manhattan owned by Laurent Torrendel. BLT stands for Bistro Laurent Torrendel, and he has a fish restaurant and a steak restaurant. And this is his high-end aged steak restaurant. And speaking of things that are
you are squeaking a little.
Mucilaginous. Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with me today.
You got a little too much mucilaginy in there.
We were served. We ordered some of the dry-aged steaks, which were just fabulous. I love steakhouse eating, and we were at the steakhouse. We ordered a bunch of dry-aged steaks, and we'll explain what dry-aged is in a moment. But the thing that was interesting that is sort of related to okra is they served the bones with marrow forks, which is a very old way. A lot of people don't realize that the bone marrow is on an aged steak is extraordinary. And the way it works is you sort of dig out with a little wooden marrow fork the marrow out of the center of the cut bone, and you can smear it on the steak or smear it on some toast. Absolutely
I know
incredible.
People who will just eat that by the forkful, though, and I'll tell you, same problem that I have with okra is the texture of that just grosses me out.
Well, it's kind of like eating jelly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the texture thing.
I don't know.
You eat jelly, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, that grosses me out. For me, it's kind of like eating jelly. Sorry. Forgot about that, donut man. But the thing about it is to use these ingredients in as a component of a dish really work. And you know as well as I do that while you don't like to eat marrow, and I do, using bone marrow in like melting it on top of a steak or melting it into a dish.
There's a ton of flavor in it.
Oh, my God. And the texture of it as it works in a larger dish is really remarkable. That's why
that's one of the reasons we tell people to eat to when you're cooking your steak, cook it on the bone. Because you'll get so much flavor from that bone when the meat's cooking, but it will be much more discreet than actually taking a spoonful of bone marrow.
Everyone's in love with, the heck with discreet, give me the bone marrow, I'll do both. But there's a tendency now, everyone seems to be in love with what's called filet mignon or tenderloin,
mm-hmm.
Which is a boneless piece of meat, it's cooked as a boneless piece of meat, and it's, you know, I understand it. It's got a nice, easy texture.
Texturally. I think that people fell in love with filet mignon because it was texturally just so delicate and kind of would melt away in your mouth. The perfect filet mignon kind of melts away in your mouth.
But it also has less flavor than other cuts of meat. So last night, among real foodies, none of us would think about ordering the filet mignon. I mean, it mm-hmm. didn't even come up, and it didn't have a pride of place on this real steakhouse, really very good steakhouse's menu.
Mm-hmm.
We ordered ribeye.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do you order ribeye? Because it's cooked on the bone. We ordered porterhouse. Why porterhouse? Because it's cooked on the bone, and you get the marrow, and you also get the moderating influence of the bone's temperature.
And realize that a porterhouse has on one side of it the strip steak, and on the other side of it the filet mignon. But again, that filet mignon is cooked on the bone, so it is much more flavorful and much richer than your regular filet mignon.
And you can't fry it in a pan. You need to finish anything in a bone on the oven. But there's that old saying, you know, the sweetest meat is closest to the bone. And that's really true.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tendency in our society to cook filet mignon and chicken breast and sort of to divorce yourself from realizing that, you know, meat comes from an animal. You want to be a vegetarian, be a vegetarian. You know, chicken breast does not come from...
I think also that people really enjoy, like I said, the texture. People enjoy that they can cut it with a fork and it's very delicate that way.
I think it's also we can be a little bit lazy, and I think that the modern trend of our cuisine is to make
I work with
easy.
You. You can be plenty lazy. That's
we
fine.
As a society can be a little lazy.
Oh, you weren't just talking about you and me?
But, I mean, that's why people don't eat whole fish anymore, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to wrestle with the bones, but you know what? A whole fish is a whole different flavor than cooking a filet or a steak.
We promised people we'd tell them what dry aging is.
Oh, dry aging. Dry aging is when you take a steak as opposed to wet aging, and the way to tenderize a steak is to let it hang, and it slowly, well, folks, it basically rots from the outside. But the outside forms an airtight seal as mm-hmm. as this one outside part dries out. And then the inside part slowly ages over time and gets tender and soft and develops flavor. Wet aging is when you short-circuit the first part and just wrap the thing in plastic so you don't lose any volume.
Usually, and you know, cryovacing has become a very popular
process. And it gets more tender.
Now.
And it gets more tender, but it doesn't develop a lot more
exactly.
flavor. Listen, we're going to be talking about flavor in just a moment with Paul Rosen, who's going to be our guest today. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're with Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys, and we have a very special guest today. We have Paul Rosen with us today. Paul is a professor of psychology at the University of Pennsylvania, where he's co-director of the school's Solomon Asch Center for the Study of Ethnopolitical Conflict. He's a former editor of Appetite, an international research journal specializing in behavioral nutrition, if you're wondering what the relevance to us was. He's an expert on psychological, cultural, and biological determinants of human food choice, and he joins us today to talk about foods we choose and why. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Good morning.
Good morning, Paul. How are you today?
Okay, I was just listening to your conversation in the last second, and I want to say you're right online about the bone and steak,
mm-hmm.
because there are two reasons why people might not want it. One is that it's a reminder of animals, and people don't like the idea that they're eating an animal.
I do.
Well, most people don't.
I know.
And the other thing is that it is harder to eat, and people really like it to be easy.
And do you find, though, that you know, people are willing to sacrifice? This is the thing that amazes me. To Mark and my view of things, it strikes me that through the 60s and 70s, we've really gone to, we're willing to give up a surprising amount of flavor for ease of use. Is that a trend that's international or, yeah, just
or perishability?
Americans?
Same, yeah, thing.
Well, yes, I'd say that first of all, it's in our nature, as a biological nature, to try to do things without having to put out much effort.
Uh-huh.
I mean, in the ancestral human environment, or for non-human animals, the idea is to get as much as you can to eat without having to work too hard.
Mm-hmm.
If you work too hard, you have to get more to eat.
You know what I say to that?
But
go to a restaurant.
Well, indeed. And that is one of the things that people do. But, of course, the next step, which is very common among upper-class people in New York, is to get the restaurant to come to you. So people stay home in a good restaurant. Brings the food to them.
Uh-huh.
That's the ultimate. You don't even have to walk out of your house
right.
to get the good food. So the answer is that there is this trend, and it's clear not just in food, but in automatic garage door openers and, you know, remote controls of TVs, that basically people want to basically sit on their can and have everything come to them. And the movies, you know, are better and better at home.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is that we are the leading country in the world in this, but it's partly because we have the technology to make it happen. So the rest of the world is, in many ways, trying to imitate us, which is sad for the world of food.
Yeah.
So I study France a lot, and
mm-hmm.
French are much more like the kind of people you're talking about, much more concerned with their food and making the food and... But they're becoming also co-opted by the ease of getting everything done for you.
Why is it that other cultures, I mean, in Italy and even in Germany, but no less so in Germany, but, you know, in Italy and France, people are willing to, people who could get food conveniently,
sure.
still hold on to old traditions and do make food that's a little more difficult and better.
Right.
While in America,
and I've lived there. You go to the store every day when you're in France.
Well, that's part of the reason. Of course, they have made it easier to shop on a daily basis because,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's usually a few blocks away
uh-huh.
to
right.
the bakery, to the butcher. And in addition, there is a lot of social life goes around that. You know, and when you go to the butcher in France, you're probably not sure what you want to cook for dinner yet
right.
until you talk to the butcher.
Right.
He says, oh, I've got this particular good cut today. Similarly with the cheese store. So whereas we go out with a set menu pretty much and shop for the week.
Well, we used to have that, though, in America. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, there were bakeries and butchers,
yeah.
and my mother used to go to all the different places. Why did we relinquish it so quickly? Whereas, you know, I'll speak to French people who now have the option of going to a supermarket
right.
in France. But they'll say, well, I don't buy my meat in a supermarket. I would never. Why? What's the cultural difference there?
Well, there's part of it is a cultural difference, and a part of it is just that we have been more advanced at making these things particularly appealing. So, I mean, Walmart is the ultimate example where you go one stop and you get everything you might ever need. And you can go there once a week and cut your shopping down to an hour and be doing whatever else you want to do for the rest of the week. So we are finding ways to make that as easy as possible, including having people carry your packages out
yeah.
to your car, right? And you usually bring it home if you live in the suburbs to your garage, which is connected to your kitchen.
Right. Right.
So we have designed the culture, but it's motivated by both economy, that
mm-hmm.
Walmart is cheaper, and saving time. Now, one might think that there are more important things in the world than economy and saving time, but in terms of, you know, the world that we live in, those are very high priorities. In France, people are, they spend more time eating.
Right.
I mean, mm-hmm. you know, we would consider that in some sense a waste of time.
Right.
Yeah.
It is definitely a different mindset.
You could be watching your favorite TV show, or for that matter, investing in the market or something.
You know, it's funny because the meal it's like the point of the day
mm-hmm.
often. And
absolutely.
You get everything else out of the way so that you can sit
right.
down
you do
with
the
your
other,
friends.
You do the other things so that you can get together and you know, I worked in a factory for a time in France and they had a 2-hour lunch
yeah.
at least a couple of days a week. To sit down and get together and split a bottle of wine and that was a big part of their day. It was probably the most important part of the day.
Okay, they spend all this time eating, they eat all this great food, but they're not fat and we are. Why is that?
Well, the answer to there are a couple of answers to that. One answer is that they eat less. That's the best answer.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
They probably get more exercise too, but we know they eat less. And they eat less because, for a number of reasons, but one is that they're served less. their portion sizes are smaller, and people eat what you put in front of them.
Uh-huh.
So the French ice cream cone, the standard cone, is about the size of a half a dollar. If anyone knows what a half a dollar is anymore.
You're dating yourself, Paul.
It's about a third of the size of our thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, basically people eat what they're given. So you go and get an ice cream cone in France, you eat it, and you've had your ice cream.
Right. It's a fact that people will eat more if you put more food in front of them.
No question about it.
That's a fact.
And the other, and in restaurants here, the portion sizes are, we've measured this actually, are considerably larger.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, even McDonald's in Paris serves smaller soda and French fries. Packages for this, you know, for their standards than we do. So part of it is that. Another part of it is that the French don't snack much.
Uh-huh.
The idea is a meal is the event that,
right.
at which you eat. And a meal is not just eating, it's socializing, it's all these things. So that you eat at localized times, and you're not sort of nibbling all day.
Yeah, but also you alluded to this earlier. You know, you walk to the butcher shop, you walk to the cheese store, and maybe they're only a few blocks from your house. But instead of parking in the grand Walmart parking lot, getting out, getting your stuff, getting back in your car, and driving to your home, you're walking throughout the town to pick up the things that you need, and you're doing that every day.
And incidentally, when you do go to Walmart, you'll circle the parking lot four times to get a spot closer.
Right,
so you get a spot, what, like 5 feet closer. Hey, our guest today is Paul Rosen. He's a professor of psychology at the University of Pennsylvania and a noted expert on human food choices. And we're talking with him today about why we eat what we eat. And, you know, one of the things that you've alluded to, Paul, is an appetite for pleasure, you know? And when we come back, I want to talk with you more about needing a certain amount of pleasure, and maybe if you eat better foods, you don't need quite as much. We'll talk with you more in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
You're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Today we have Professor Paul Rosen, a professor of psychology at the University of Pennsylvania and noted expert in human food choices. Thanks for staying with us there, Paul.
So, Paul, we were talking before about how different cultures eat differently, and they're more focused on food. They spend more time with food, yet they're less fat than we are and less obsessed with food than we are. And you talked about, you know, in Europe getting an ice cream cone that's about a third the size of our ice cream cone. I have long believed that there is sort of an appetite. I eat because I want to treat myself to something great.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I go out and I have a really great ice cream cone, I'm satisfied. If I go out and I have like an Oreo, I just keep eating Oreos because I haven't really satisfied my pleasure appetite. Is there any validity to that?
Or you find yourself in the pantry and you eat a little of this and it didn't do it for you. And you eat a little of that and it didn't do it for you. And eat a little of that and it didn't do it for you.
Are we off base here, or are we?
Well, I mean, I think that people can easily gorge on foods that are high quality and that they love.
Mm-hmm.
I think it really is a matter of more of, if it's something really outstanding, you're more likely to savor it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're less likely to gorge it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, my dogs, I'm always amazed when I feed them a good piece of steak. It's down their gullet before they even taste
it.
Right.
And so I've discovered I might as well give them little tiny pieces and a lot of those. So I force them to have more taste experience.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, what is going on a lot in this country is a lot of people are eating without attending to it.
Mm-hmm.
That is, they're talking about the Dallas Cowboys while they eat or something.
Right, or they're eating at their desks.
It's much more likely in France to be talking about the food while you eat it. And when you're doing that, you're paying more attention. And so I believe that in a French meal in which they eat less food, they have much more food experience than we do because they're attending to it and they're, you know, noticing what's happening and talking about it. So, I mean, I think they get more food experience but eat less food.
So you think that we would
eat less if we sat around talking about the foods we were eating?
I think we would eat less. First of all, I think you'd eat, well, it turns out that people eat more the more people are sitting at the table.
Huh.
That's true, but that's because they sit at the table longer. I mean, you know, you're more likely to sit around if there's a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem is that you have to have food there all the time.
Right.
While you're sitting around. I mean, you know, you can wait between courses.
Right, right.
And if you're sitting with people you like, that's quality time.
Well, you write, a well-developed culture of eating, such as you find in France or Italy, mediates the eater's relationship to food, which moderates the consumption as it prolongs and deepens the pleasure of eating.
Yeah.
And the conclusion you drew from that, and I love this, is that worrying about food is not really good for your health.
Well, worrying is generally not good for health. I mean, it just adds stress to life. Now, there are cases where worry is productive. Like if you're worrying about something which might lead you to go to the doctor and get a diagnosis. The problem is that the way that Americans worry about food is not productive. First of all, they're sort of treating every bite of food as if it's going to have an effect on their arteries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And basically what we find is that the French, are, when they're eating, are not thinking about what the food is going to do in their body. They're thinking about what it tastes like.
Right, right.
So if we ask the French, for example, when you think of heavy cream, do you think of whipped or unhealthy?
Right.
The French say whipped, and the Americans say unhealthy.
Right. And
so
that
the French are thinking about culinary
right.
events about food.
Well, we're talking with Paul Rosen. He's a professor of psychology at the University of Pennsylvania, and we're talking with him about why we eat what we eat, and we'll be talking with him more about that after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with my partner, Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon just through restaurantguysradio.com. Today, we're talking with Paul Rosen, who is a professor of psychology at the University of Pennsylvania and noted expert on human food choices, and we're talking to him about why we eat what we eat. Paul, we were just talking a little bit about word associations that we as Americans make versus what say the French make. Do you have any of the other good examples for us about things yeah. that we associate as opposed to the way they do?
Yeah, well, one that's very interesting is chocolate. If we ask people to think of the first three words they can, what come to mind after they think of chocolate, about a quarter of American women mention fat or fattening or fatty. One of those derivatives of fat. Very few French mention that.
Wow.
That is to say, the French are thinking of chocolate as something they eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mousse,
as opposed to what it does to you.
Yeah, mousse, mm-hmm. they're thinking of mousse, they're thinking of ice cream, they're thinking of...
But what's amazing to me is, you know, I've been to France, and well, there are not very many fat women in France.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's largely, but partly because of the tradition of small eating less.
Uh-huh.
See, the problem is that I think in America... Partly probably because of our history and the great abundance of America. Abundance is a real virtue.
Mm-hmm.
So that on our ritual big meal, which is Thanksgiving, it's a successful meal if you can't get up from the table. People say that and the host is pleased. Whereas the French say, why would you want not to be able to get up from the table?
Right, right, right.
I mean,
we are infiltrating them, though.
Absolutely.
We have definitely,
sadly.
We are infiltrating them, and you know, the supermarket is making greater and greater inroads.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sadly.
But you see, their focus is more on the quality of food than the quantity.
And I think that's healthy.
Well, it turns out it's healthy because you eat less.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
it's also more pleasant because right. high-quality food is a better experience.
Give us another word association before we go off this topic.
Well, you know,
like heavy cream.
Associations to the word food
mm-hmm.
are the French are more likely to give words that are about particular foods. So they'll say, you know, beef, or they'll say a dish, right? Like, you know, a particular dish. Americans are more likely to give associations that are not particular foods, but things about food, including. Fattening, including even nutrition.
And one of the things that you wrote, you say Americans see eggs and think cholesterol.
Yes.
French see eggs and think breakfast.
That's right.
I personally see eggs and think, what, no hollandaise sauce?
Well, there you go. And it's the same thing if we ask, if you think of a bread, let's say.
Uh-huh.
Bread, we give them a choice. So does bread go with butter or with I'm trying to remember what the other word was. I think it was pasta. And Americans tend to think pasta because they're thinking high carbohydrate. Whereas French are thinking what goes with
it. Right, what actually goes with it.
Exactly. Let's look at the other end of the food spectrum.
Yeah.
There are foods that are served in American supermarkets that literally aren't allowed in France or in Italy.
That are against the law, correct?
So, I was over at somebody's house, and they opened up a can of SpaghettiOs for their kid. And I must say, it smelled like dog food to me.
I recently opened a can of Chunky Soup and had exactly the same experience. Said, this smells like dog food. What was I thinking when I was 10 years old?
I loved that food when I was 10 years old. Either what changed in me, or how did corporations convince America that that was not only acceptable, but good? How'd that happen?
First of all, I think you can buy those foods in France. If they're not there, it's because nobody wants them, because they're not allowed.
Right.
I think that you're very much, what you like is very much a function of what you're offered.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're offered is a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two aspects of that. One is that our culture has emphasized individualized foods. So when you go, if you look at the choices in ice cream or in yogurts or in soups, I mean, you get thousands, right? There's 150 different kinds of yogurt in my supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
I'm counting different sizes, different brands, different flavors.
There are four in Europe.
Now, the general idea is that everyone should make the food exactly the way they want it for them.
Mm-hmm.
So in an American restaurant, it's typical to have salt, pepper, ketchup, mustard, maybe a few other things, at the table,
mm-hmm.
so you can customize your food. The French view is that there are better ways to make food,
uh-huh.
and that the people who know about this
should do it,
like the chefs,
mm-hmm.
make these decisions. So when you go into a French restaurant and you order a steak, for example, I'm talking about a little bistro now, you'll get French fries with it. They won't ask you, do you want mashed potatoes,
mm-hmm.
lyonnaise potatoes,
right,
baked
right.
potatoes?
You'll get what they're making.
They're basically saying steak goes with French fries.
Right.
And they are, and you're accepting that because it's a collective value.
Right.
So we have this other sort of idea, and we have what I call enormous micro variety as a result. Little tiny variations on everything. Baskin and Robbins.
Well, and it also leads to less communal. And one of the things that I like about wine is when people go out to dinner, it's the only thing we share in an American
mm-hmm.
restaurant is the
That's
bottle
right.
of wine. Everything else is to your individual liking. There's no more family style. A family style mm-hmm. restaurant's very unusual to come by these days.
Yes, but you can find them in the United States. What you can't find in France, by the way, is all-you-can-eat restaurants.
Right.
Yeah.
Because their answer is why?
Well, exactly.
Yeah, but you don't. What you don't find in the United States is the super premium family style or sharing
yes,
restaurant.
Yes, you don't find restaurants that's also, which is very characteristic of France, they'll have maybe four main courses.
Uh-huh.
And basically that's it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's all.
And the guy in the kitchen or the woman in the kitchen has found what's good in the market that day,
and they're cooking.
And they're going to make a couple of good things, and they'll all be pretty good.
But
yeah, we actually did an interview with a woman in Brooklyn named Liza Queen who does exactly that. She goes to the market in the morning, comes back and says, "Okay, there are."
But it's a novelty.
Six things on the menu. Here you go.
But it's a novelty
mm-hmm.
around here. Like, listen, Paul, I really do want to. I want to just go back to the low end of the market for a moment again. There are things that amaze me, like for instance, grape soda. There's this mm-hmm. this flavor out there called grape
yeah.
soda, grape lollipops, whatever.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of grapes in my life, and this flavor that corporations have convinced us to call grape.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with grapes.
I prefer to call it purple.
Yeah, exactly. It's the purple
to call
flavor.
That flavor
so
purple.
Words count for a lot. People. If you give people different sodas with their eyes closed, they can't tell you if it's orange or grape or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are. You can do the jelly bean test. It's the easiest thing to do. Just close your eyes and taste the jelly bean. People are actually quite poor at this. This is not just Americans.
Mm-hmm.
People in general are poor. They're very influenced by color and labels.
Right.
So it hasn't occurred to people that grape soda is unrecognizably grape because it says grape on there.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a certain flavor that must have been developed in a laboratory somewhere that because you find it in the lollipop and the pixie stick and the soda, and it's the
yeah.
same, but it has nothing to do with grapes.
Well, first of all, the question really is it, A, is it the people like it?
Uh-huh.
And that's, and the answer must be to some degree yes, though it's not one of the most popular sodas.
Mm-hmm.
And does the name calling it grape as opposed to something else help? And I presume marketing people have discovered that, yeah, it works.
So it definitely works.
We'll just make up a name. Not on me, everybody. Hey, Paul, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to talk with us about food choices. And we're gonna direct people to, you know, I understand you're working on a new book called Learning About Everything.
Well, I'm actually trying to write a book with a colleague who's a biochemist on how to think sensibly about food, which is really an anti-diet book in a way. I mean, diets don't work. It's trying to get people to just enjoy their food more, eat it more slowly, and make it a totally positive part of their life.
Well, when that book comes out, we're going to put it up on our website and send a lot of people to it, because it sounds like you have a lot of great insight, and we thank you for sharing it with us today in the restaurant,
thank
guys.
You.
All right, take
thanks
care.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Paul Rosen, a professor of psychology at the University of Pennsylvania, where he is co-director of the school's Solomon Asch Center for the Study of Ethnopolitical Conflict. He's the former editor of Appetite, an international research journal specializing in behavioral nutrition. He's an expert on psychological, cultural, and biological determinants of human food consumption and choice, and he's pretty cool. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We had a very interesting guest in the first part of the show, a guy named Paul Rosen, who's a professor of psychology, who talks about food choices and why we choose what we choose. And he does a lot of cross-cultural studies of different cultures and their attitudes towards food. I think some of the most interesting things were when you get the word chocolate cake, you play word associations in France and America. The word chocolate cake in America, I'm sorry, the word chocolate frais cake in France, most common word responded, celebration. Most common response to chocolate cake in America? Guilt. Heavy cream. French say whipped. Americans say unhealthy.
Francis.
What?
We're doing it wrong.
We're doing it wrong. We are the most obsessed with, and this is true, we are the most obsessed with food culture on the planet, and we derive less pleasure from food than almost any other Western culture.
Francis?
Yeah.
We're doing it wrong.
We're doing it. We're doing it wrong. Isn't that crazy? That's an actual survey.
It's unbelievable. But again, if you travel to other countries, you realize that they're just doing it differently. First of all, one of the things that we didn't touch on is generally in Europe, your biggest meal comes at lunchtime as opposed to dinner time.
Much more important, much better.
So, you know, you're not going right to sleep. You're getting a chance to work off the calories from that meal. It's different.
But, you know, and unfortunately, the world is going the wrong way because they're following us instead of us following them.
Right, exactly. More and more McDonald's, bigger portions. All these things are happening in Europe right now.
You know, well, the other thing is if you look at I have a bunch of friends in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And if you work for a multinational corporation in Spain, you don't get the traditional siesta in some of the country, mm-hmm. in some of the companies. And so that is really causing a rift, because what happens when you have a society where nobody gets off till 5, that's fine.
Right.
If you have a society that everybody takes off between 12 and 3 and then works until 7, that's fine. But what if half the people get off at 5
right.
and have their lunch and half the people don't? What do you do if you want to get together with your family?
Right.
You know what? It's funny. I look back to the days when things used to be closed on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was so stupid that things would have to close on Sunday.
It wasn't so bad.
I don't think it's so stupid.
It wasn't so bad.
Because it made a time that you knew that on Sunday everybody could get together.
But we're also busy now. We've cluttered our lives with all sorts of things now.
And I think that keeps us
extraordinarily busy, and both parents work, and we run from thing to thing.
But I think part of this is
we have to eat in the car because there's no time to eat anyplace else.
But I think some of the societal impetus behind having things closed on Sunday was it forced you and forced everybody to not be that busy.
Right.
And I think that was probably a good thing. You know, the other thing that this makes us...
I thought it was forcing you to watch football at home.
Have a day off to watch football at home. One of the things that I think that this makes us very susceptible to as a culture is this whole fad diet thing that we
mm-hmm.
go through. That is a uniquely American thing, and the Germans do it a little bit. But other than that, there are no fad diets in France. They eat what they always eat.
Right.
And they're healthier than we are. And worrying about food, a food marketing consultant once said that it's not at all uncommon for Americans to pay a visit to the health club after work for the express purpose of sanctioning the enjoyment of an entire pint of ice cream before bed, you know?
That's...
And they also
Why'd you
said,
go to the gym? So I could have a scoop of ice cream.
I know, well, because I don't feel guilty then. And also, Michael Pollan in the New York Times in a recent article wrote that America's food industry is more than happy to get behind any fad diet as long as it doesn't actually involve eating less food.
Yeah.
A lone crackpot with a medical degree can alter this nation's diet overnight. And that's true.
Yep.
I mean, we'll go, oh, can't have any carbohydrates, no carbohydrates, no carbohydrates, to, okay, can't have any protein, can't have any protein, no protein at all. But, or you join this club where you buy some very expensive, really mediocre-tasting frozen
yeah,
meals.
Yeah, the 3 meals a day program. And actually, they deliver to your house. And I just read another article on this, and you and I actually tried some of these meals not too long ago. Just to test them.
Frozen stuff that comes in a box that you all heat up together is just...
I'm sorry. I don't care if Emeril makes it, and I'm just using his name. But I don't care... If his face is on the package, if it was frozen in Michigan 6 months ago, it's not going to taste good.
Even if you say bam, 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 bam when you make it? Are you sure? Did you try the bam?
I'm pretty sure.
You didn't do the bam.
But we are so...
You put it in the toaster oven and you didn't do the bam, bam, bam.
We are so susceptible...
To stupidity?
In our nation to this fad diet thing that you're talking about. I mean, even at the turn of the century, in this Pollan article, they mention that at the turn of the century, the Fletcherizing.
Right, which was if you chewed your food 27
100 times,
then
you
lose
every
weight.
They called him the great masticator. Hysterical.
There's and a straight line there.
We've been doing this for 100 years.
The
fad diet after fad diet after fad diet, and we just keep getting fatter and fatter and fatter.
But
and
what's
fatter.
Very hard is to take the time, like you alluded
listen,
to.
Listen, I understand. I'm overweight guy. Mm-hmm. I'm a big, heavy guy, and it's for all of these reasons.
But if you limit your food intake to real whole foods, and you don't have any candy bars, and you don't have any cookies, you know, and you have, a piece of fish, a whole apple, not apple juice, a whole, apples and oranges, and you eat whole pieces of food, you're gonna have your appetite satisfied. You're gonna have a nice volume of food to eat, and you're gonna lose weight. The problem is. It's really hard to get a good piece of fish cooked well that hasn't been fried.
And our portions are too big.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, and I'll tell you from my own personal experience, you run from thing to thing to thing to thing, and what do? You go back to old bad habits very quickly, very easily, and you reach for whatever gives you pleasure quickly, and you run to the next thing.
Well, and also I think that when people excessively worry about their health and they view, everything they put in their body, it's almost like a drug, know? And, when you go to Europe, it's funny because they're just not fat. I mean,
right.
This is – their culture is much more focused on food than ours. And, people take time to prepare food. And even people who are busy, who are friends of ours in the wine business, will prepare food for the week. That you can put in the refrigerator and come back to them. And you can roast off 2 chickens on Sunday and then have chicken 5 different ways throughout the course of the week or have chicken 2 or 3 times during the course of the week. But they'll do that before they'll stop at a fast food place. That's and that's really what's causing the problem in obesity and lack of health.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's a good thing that Americans are focused on good food. But, this whole flavor spray sort of... fake food.
You're not buying it, huh?
If you want to lose weight, you're just going to have to eat less. But if you want to eat less, the way to do that is to eat better, eat whole food, eat real food. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys. We're talking about food choices and cultural attitudes towards food. Mark, I have a little quote here I want to read from you. This is talking about America's unhealthy attitude toward food that goes way back. This is a quote from William Sylvester Graham of the Graham Cracker and John Kellogg. We know the Kelloggs, right? This is what they write. Taste is not a true guide to what should be eaten, that one should not simply eat what one enjoys. The important components of food cannot be seen or tasted, but are discernible only in scientific laboratories, and that experimental science has produced rules of nutrition that will prevent illness and encourage longevity. That was written in 1904. Genius. Genius it is. Stupid.
Well, food. Not so stupid, okay, because they're great, okay?
Graham crackers?
No, I was doing my
Kellogg's,
Tony Tiger. Come on!
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is, look, what we've found, and here's where things are coming back to, the more we look at, and science is backing this up, we've found that eating good food, especially grown locally, is, look, lo and behold, that's the best thing for you.
Yep.
You don't need to overanalyze it. You don't need to break it down. Stay away from stuff that's made in a company in a place that you don't know what it is.
The sooner you pick it off the vine, the more nutrients it retains, the better it is for you.
The more recognizable it is from what it comes from, because an Oreo doesn't look like mm-hmm. anything. Like, what does that come from? I don't know. But, you know, an apple, an orange, you know, you can eat a piece of steak. You know, you can eat a piece of chicken and have your fill of it as well. One final note, the French paradox.
Yes.
And this is my ultimate example of just crazy way that we look at food. They did a study. The French paradox did a study that shows that the French, though they eat all sorts of high fat food, are less likely to get heart attacks than American men who you know don't eat those you know foie gras and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they did after they did this study, they found that Americans are more likely to get heart attacks than the French, and it must be the red wine. That's the difference in the diets. And so what we try to do is we're trying to come up with a pill.
Red wine pills.
To have that you can take to reduce your essence heart attack. Okay, listen to me, everybody. French guy gets up in the morning. He goes to the office. He kisses everybody. Gets to work about 9:30. Works till noon. Has a two-hour lunch. Drinks a bottle of wine. Kind of meanders back to the office around 3. Does a little work in the afternoon. Go home. Goes out with his friends at night. Has another glass of wine, goes to bed. American guy gets up in the morning, rushes to work 15 minutes late, commutes 2 hours both ways, drives his kid to the soccer game, the basketball game, the lacrosse game, and
screams
eats in the car.
At the guy out the window.
Yeah. And eats at his desk. It's not in the pill.
I just want to say something to everybody. A lot of Central Jersey restaurants are participating in something on Wednesday, September 14th, donating 10% of their food proceeds to the victims of Hurricane Katrina.
And you can go to our website and find out all about that.
Absolutely.
I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 12 noon.
Central Jersey traffic, weather, and your...